Anyway, the birthdays were really good tonight. Very special. Russ made a point about not learning people's names. Through the years, so many people have come and gone here that I think subconsciously, I didn't realize it when you were talking, but a lot of them, I don't learn their names till I see them a while, because it's just too many names. It's not consciously, but, and then when they get, you see them, then you know their name. It's I don't know how to explain that. Tomorrow, Wednesday night, we're covering step four, and we have two new people. We teach the big book here. We have a website, experiencethebigbook.org, and we have 300 podcasts on there.
Amazing.
And we have 77 thoughts, and I think it's been very well received. There are a lot of people who are downloading and subscribing and looking at the site, so it makes me feel good. Paula sent me a text last night that about doing God's will to do this meeting, and I was thinking that about that when I was driving here, that for so long I did my will, and when I do God's will, I feel okay. And I know when I'm doing God's will because I feel okay. And I couldn't explain to people, but I used to work, believe it or not, and I used to have to get up on Saturdays, and I used to have to open up, and I had to go to the hospital and make rounds and see the consults before I got here. And after I did the meeting, I'd go home, I'd sit in my chair, and I couldn't have felt better. I can't explain it. I just felt great. And I think that's what we get here. We feel good by doing good. And so, anyway, on Wednesday night, we're going to look at resentment inventory. We're on step four on Wednesday night in the book. We're on page 64. And I thought it was really good last Wednesday. And we're going to look at resentments in detail. On Saturday morning, we're at the best part of the book for me, which is pages 84 to 88, and we're on step 10. And we covered the recovered promises yesterday. We're going to cover the warning and get right into the instructions on step 11. So if you can join us on Saturday morning. Tonight, we're covering something that I don't know how many times I've done Bill's story in almost 12 years, but tonight it really hit me, because we're reading the pages that I think everybody should read, all people, not just alcoholics. And we're going to start today on page 12, and I like to leave time for discussion, but the birthdays took a while, so we'll see how much we do. Not that that's bad, but I want to cover, when I prepare this, there's certain places that you want to cover certain points. So we're going to start on 12, and I'd like to get through to page 14. And last week we covered this. Bill's sitting in the kitchen with Ebbie Thatcher. It's 1934. Bill is dying of alcoholism. We all agree with that?
Yes.
He said alcohol was his master. Fear sobered him up. Then he drank, self-knowledge sobered him up, and then he drank, remember? Mm-hmm. And then he's sitting in the kitchen, and Ebbie calls him, and he's excited because he has somebody to drink with. And before he got the call, he was making sure he had enough booze hidden in the house to get through the night, whether he had to put some behind the bed with his Wi-Fi. Anybody relate to any of that craziness? Mm-hmm. And then Ebbie comes, and he's disturbed because Ebbie's sober. And Ebbie says, I've got religion. And he says, oh, well, you know, get me out of this. You know, he had such enthusiasm for Ebbie. Could you tell? And Ebbie talked, and he says, well, he can rant. I have more booze than he can rant. And he's sitting there, and Bill's arguing with Ebbie, and he's fighting the idea of God. He's fighting the idea that he has to be accountable to someone. He's fighting the idea that there's some power greater than him that can help him. And he's dying. And he's arguing with Ebbie in his kitchen. And they sat for hours. And he said, on page 12, he says, despite the living example of Ebbie, there remained in me the vestiges of my old prejudice. He had prejudice against God. Now, I think a lot of alcoholics have prejudice against God. Mm-hmm. Some believe in God, but they still have prejudice in the concept of giving themselves completely to God. And prejudice is just prejudgment. The word God still arouses a certain antipathy. That's a deep-seated feeling of dislike. When he thought was expressed that there might be a God personally, this feeling was intensified. I heard somebody talk today that, and it was good, he wasn't talking about alcoholism, he was talking about grace, but that alcoholics don't like a God personal to them. They don't want to be accountable. Mm-hmm. They don't want anybody, because they know they've done bad, and they know their lives have been a mess. And they didn't want somebody judging them, and they already felt bad enough. He didn't like the idea of God. He resisted the thought of a czar of the heavens. Now, my friend suggested what then seemed a novel idea. Now, I haven't gone into this before, but there's some conflict whether Ebbe actually said these exact words or not. It doesn't matter. Ebbe was there. Bill was there. This is what Ebbe said. Why don't you choose your own conception of God? This was the idea that Ebbe said. Pick your own idea of God. You can't argue with that. Now, this next paragraph, I saw something new today. It says that statement hit him hard. It melted the icy intellectual mountain in whose shadow I had lived and shivered many years. I stood in the sunlight at last. And I was thinking today when I read this, I still find this powerful stuff. I don't know about you. Anybody think it's powerful? Bill was defeated by alcohol on page 8. He said alcohol was his master, right? Quicksand surrounded him. He knew he was powerless over alcohol, and he knew he was defeated. But here is where I think Bill surrendered. This is where Bill gave up, because when he said his own conception of God, it hit him hard. It melted this icy intellectual mountain. Now think about it. He had built this intellectual mountain out of ice that blocked him from the light. Now, those of you who have read Scripture understand about the darkness and the light. For those who haven't, darkness is not good. It's just a hint, it's not good. We want to be in the light. And Bill had built the mountain himself. You see, there's so much in this one, these few lines. He had built this. God didn't build the mountain. He built this icy intellectual mountain. Anybody here intelligent? All alcoholics think they're intelligent. I heard an alcoholic say that we're very highly intelligent. Well, I don't know how he knows. But we built this intellectual mountain. Right, only an alcoholic would say alcoholics are intelligent, right? In whose shadow he had lived. Now think about it. I lived in the shadow of my icy intellectual mountain that I built. And I didn't realize it. Anybody else do that? And it melted. And in whose shadow I had lived and shivered many years. And you see, here's the thing for me, why this is so powerful. I didn't realize that there was light behind that mountain. I could only see what I could see because I was in the darkness and I'd built this blockage between me and God. I know about you. And he stood in the sunlight at last. So he's in the darkness. And then Ebbe tells him, choose your own conception of God. And he stood in the sunlight at last. And now we're going to read how he moved into the light. And he started to walk in the light. And so it's very powerful. It says, did anybody see that? Does it make sense? It's great the way he wrote it. I had read that many times. And now he says, it's only a matter of being willing to believe in a power greater than himself. Now that seems pretty simple. But for an alcoholic to be willing to give up on themselves, what he's really saying is that I could see that there's something else that better than besides me that can help me. I can't do it. I'm going to surrender. I'm going to be willing to believe that there's a power greater than myself that can help me. And it's hard for us to do that. We could do it intellectually, but he's doing it from the heart here. He really means it. He could see it. And you're going to see he changes. Because when he says it with the heart, he says, nothing more was required of me to make my beginning. And this is step 2, where Bill takes steps 2. I saw that growth could start from that point. And here is the deal. Upon the foundation of complete willingness, I might build what I saw in my friend. Now, they use this analogy throughout the big book that we're building a structure. We're building a structure through which we walk from the darkness to the light. And when we're in the darkness, we have that icy intellectual mountain blocking us from God. And we want to move into the light, into a relationship with God. And then when we do that, we have a power to live. And we have a power so we don't have to drink. And remember, the foundation of the structure is complete willingness. Now, I had one lady, I don't see her much anymore. I don't know what happened to her, but she came and she said, we talked about it at one meeting and she left and she said, I'm going to work on that. And the next meeting, she says, you know, I'm 95% willing now. I said, well, that's great, but the 5% will kill you. I said, that's leaving 5% of a cancer in the patient's chest. Mm. And so we have to be 100% completely willing, and he's going to build what he saw in Ebi. Now, there's also some power in this. You should be able to see it in us. You should be able to see it in us if you're new, the structure that we've built, how we've changed. So you'll want to build it. And you can see it when we celebrate birthdays. You can see it in those people. And that's why it's so important to come to meetings and be part of a spiritual fellowship that's seeking the solution. Would I have it? Of course. Of course I would. Now, he didn't want any of it before page 12, right? He didn't want any of it till he changed his mind and opened his mind to his own conception of God. And there's some power in that because I can't change anybody. I can't get them to do it. I can see they need it, but they'll argue and they won't do it. And so, of course he would. So he's changed. So look at the next line. See what's happened just in what? 80 words. Thus was I convinced. He's now convinced. He's gone from, he doesn't like the idea of God, to melting the mountain, standing in the sunlight, believing there's a power greater than themselves. He has a foundation of complete willingness. Thus was I convinced that God is concerned with us humans when we want him enough. Isn't that the theme of the big book? God can and will if he's sought. Greg mentioned it. When we're ready, God's there for us. And he's always been there. We're going to see that in We Agnostics, but we blocked him out. At long last, and he's going to talk about that in the next paragraph. At long last, I saw, I felt, I believed. Something's changed in Bill just by being willing to believe that there was a power greater than himself that could solve his problem. Scales of pride and prejudice. Any prideful people in here? Well, I think we're like all pros at pride. And we have intellectual pride, which is the worst form because we know everything. And scales of it and the prejudice fell from his eyes. Now, when we give up on our pride, and our old ideas, remember, it's we're going to die if we don't give up our old ideas, right? So when he gives up his old ideas, guess what happens? A new world came into view. Mm-hmm. Now, here's the problem. For if you're new, there's a new world, but you don't see it because you still have scales on your eyes. And until you're willing to believe that there's a power greater than yourself, until you're willing to take step one and be completely defeated and then surrender, you're not going to see the new world. And that's why it says on step three on page 64, something's happened. Something happens when we make that decision not to play God anymore, right? And a new world came into view. Now, I guarantee it's going to be better than the old world. And what really comes into view is that there's a power, there's a way out, there's hope. And then as the world comes into view, as you do the steps, you begin to experience the new world. So just seeing it is good, but you want to be in it, right? You want to be participating in it. You want to be experiencing it. And then he says, the real significance of my experience in the cathedral burst upon me. This is when he was in Winchester Cathedral after the war, and he found that tombstone that said, you know, the man died by pot. That wasn't marijuana, that was beer. And he had that spiritual experience when he was in Winchester Cathedral, and he was much moved, and he went out and saw the tombstone. And I've been to Winchester Cathedral, yeah, and it's very powerful. And that's where I had to practice step 10 and 11, because I wanted to find the tombstone, and I was told, we're not doing that. We're not gonna run around looking for the tombstone. We're tired, we've had a long day. So I said, fine, honey. But apparently it's there, you can find it and see where Bill went. Anyway, it's on the tape, I hope she doesn't listen. For a brief, she loves me, she'll forgive me. She won't even pay attention. For a brief moment, I had needed and wanted God. Anybody have that? Mm-hmm. That's like the waiting room. But we've all had that time where we have that want and need for God, and we see him. And there had been a humble willingness to have him with me, and he came. But here's the warning. But soon the sense of his presence had been blotted out by worldly clamors, mostly those within myself. And so Bill was much moved. He felt this power available to him, but then we block God out. God doesn't go anywhere. He's in here all the time. What blocked out Bill? He wanted to be a success, remember? He wanted to be a leader. He wanted to prove to everybody he was important. He wanted to show the world that he was okay. And when he did that, who was running his life? He was. And he was running his life to get things he thought he needed to be happy. Now, Bill had the delusion that I had. I don't know about any of you, but it says on page 61 that I had a delusion that I could rest, that I could pull satisfaction and happiness out of life if I managed well. That almost killed me. Now, it wasn't bad. I wasn't a bad person, but I had a delusion that if I could just fix the world the way I wanted, I would feel okay. And I would have brief periods where that would happen, but they wouldn't last. And so he had the same thing. And so it had been ever since, how blind I had been. We couldn't even see it. People come in here, their lives are a mess, but they have no idea why. They know they have a problem with drinking and that drinking's a bad idea and they should quit, right? Nobody comes in here and doesn't realize that maybe drinking's a problem. But they couldn't be blind to the fact that they've blocked themselves out from God, that they've built an icy intellectual mountain between them and the world and their creator, and that they have been blocked by pride and prejudice. And Bill didn't see it till he had this moment. And I think as you read the book and as we study, that happens to new people. You can see they change. And when they start doing the deal and studying this with someone else, you can see they start to change. They see something different. At the hospital, he was separated from alcohol. I think that's a good idea to be separated from alcohol when you come to AA. I think not drinking is good. Seriously, it makes your program better. Treatment seemed wise, for I showed signs of delirium tremens. And then here, the next 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 paragraphs are just so small, and maybe to the middle of the 14 are very, very powerful. This is where Bill W. took the steps. This is where he had the relationship with God, and he had to have this relationship or else he wouldn't have been able to survive to find Dr. Bob. And so he had a transformation. I like to call it Saul on the Damascus Road, because something happened to Saul. He was going to kill people, and all of a sudden he decided that was a bad idea. Somebody told him it was a bad idea, knocked him on his ass, and said, you're gonna teach the scriptures to the whole world. And Bill goes in the hospital now, and he wasn't thinking of that at all, right? He's just, see what happens to this man in the next 7 paragraphs. In the hospital, he humbly offered myself to God. Now, humble is the key. We have to understand our brokenness when we offer ourselves to God. We have to understand the necessity and our need for God profoundly. It can't be, I need you, God, I've had a bad run. It's like, I am completely lost without you. I need you. And what do I need? I need to offer myself to you as I then understood him, to do with me as he would. Now that's the key. God, you do with me as you would. Usually I say, now, be sure you get me out of this house and get the job and, you know, can you ever get her to stop talking and blah, 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 blah. You get it? It's not that. That's not the kind of submission that we're talking about. We're offering ourselves to God. We're done. We don't want to manage anymore. Take care of me. Do whatever you want. I placed myself unreservedly under his care and direction. Now, we talk about putting ourselves under God's care and direction. Anybody want to do that? No? You're all asleep? All right.
I do.
Yes, we do. Now, here's the key. Unreservedly. You can't hold anything back. Whatever you hold back from giving to God that day, that's the thing that you're going to worry about and have fear over and cause you problems. And so it has to be unreservedly, and it's hard to do. It's hard to give yourself unreservedly. How do you do it? The more you hold back, the more you get into problems, the more you want to give up. And then the better your life gets, the more you want to give him everything. It just works that way. He admitted for the first time, now this is a line I really like. I say this in the morning. I admit for the first time, I do it every morning, but this was the first time of myself, I am nothing, I'm lost without you, God. I firmly believe that this morning. I believe it now, without God, I'm lost. The only choice I really have to make every day is to seek God in all areas of my life, and if I do that, I'll have a power to live and my life will be okay. I'll feel okay. That without him I am lost. Then he ruthlessly, notice the words here, ruthlessly faced my sins. He didn't say, well, maybe I'll do a four step and, you know, I'll make a list. You want me to make a list? I'll make a list. Do I have to write 50 names? How many names do I have to write? You know it is. Ruthlessly faced his sins. Yeah, I've heard it all. Ruthlessly faced my sins. And until we can see our sinful nature and what's wrong with us, we can't let God remove it because we don't see it. And we can see the truth about our lives. We can see how we blocked ourselves from God with worldly clamors and our sins with our thinking. Remember, my problem is S-H-I-T, simply how I think. And that got me into trouble. Now we see that our thinking caused us problems because our thinking was self-centered, not God-centered. So when we ask God to direct our thinking, that's the key. Because my actions always follow my thinking. And if I still have the same thinking, my actions aren't going to change. Ed's not here, God bless him. He's traveling. He'll be back. If nothing changes, nothing changes, right? And if I don't change, my sobriety date will. And he faced his sins and he became willing to have his newfound friend, look at the words for God here, newfound friend, take them away, root and branch. Not take them away a little bit, take away the root and the branch. That's step 6 and 7. He took step 1, 2, 3, 4, 6, and 7. I have not had a drink since. Is that powerful? This man was dying. He did these simple things. And look what happened. And he died in 1971. This is 1934. My schoolmate, Ebby, visited me, and I fully acquainted him with my problems and deficiencies. So this is where he does 4 and 5. They made a list of people I had hurt or toward whom I felt resentment. This is steps 8 and 9. I expressed my entire willingness, not just a little willingness. Notice the words here. Ruthlessly. Abandoned completely. Unreservedly. Admitting my wrong. Never was I to be critical of them. I'll read that again. Never was I to be critical of them. I think I'll read it again. Never was I to be critical of them. Get the hint? Anybody ever do that? It's hard, but you see, the whole point is it's all about us, not them anymore. It's about how we're going to change, how we're going to make right with the world, how we're going to have God remove our character defects. I was to write all such matters to the utmost of my ability. Notice the words in here, utmost, entire willingness, ruthlessly, unreservedly, humbly. Do you think they're serious about this? Are they talking about willing to go to any length here?
Yeah.
Giving yourself completely. He didn't say, well, I'm working on three. You know, I've been working on three for a month. I've heard that a lot. You know, it's when you're completely defeated, and I can tell when I work with somebody, I can tell when they're completely defeated. I can tell when they're willing to go to any length, and you can see how they're excited about doing it. They want to do it. They're pursuing it. And then you can see people who aren't defeated. They fight it. Oh, I forgot to do that. I didn't have time. I can't come Wednesday, blah, blah, blah. And it's not that they're bad people, but they're not defeated. And so I think the greatest gift God gave me was complete defeat. And the grace to see that I couldn't fix it and I was done and I was broken and I needed his help. And I still remember that moment and I still feel that way today. And like I said to Paul, I can't ever repay what God in AA has ever done for me. I can't possibly repay. It says, I was to test my thinking by the new God consciousness within. So he's going to test his thinking and his thinking before got him into trouble. So now he has a new God consciousness within. Now what does that mean? He's aware that there's a power. He's aware that his character defects and his sins were not good. You get it? He's going to see things differently, and it's inside of him. We all have the power inside of us. God's inside of all of us, and we're going to study that when we get to We Agnostics. And we block them out. Common sense would thus become uncommon sense. What do you think of that one? I was to sit quietly when in doubt. Anybody ever have doubt? Yep. Now, I had very little doubt before I came in here. I always knew, we always had a plan, and I was always figuring everything out. Anybody else like that?
Yep.
Now I have a lot of doubt. Sit quietly and look at this. This is the key. Asking only for direction and strength to meet my problems as he would have me. This is such a powerful line. This is what prayer is all about. Asking, petitioning God only for direction and strength to meet my problems as he would have me. And when you do that, you don't have problems anymore. You have situations. So that prayer is saying, I'm in doubt here. Here's the situation, God. Give me direction, strength, and how should I handle this? So you can handle anything. It says if we stay close to God and we let him demonstrate through us what he can do, you can handle calamity with serenity. That means that when your son dies, and you're called and you're told that he's died at 22 in the morning and you get a call at 7 a.m. from the ER, I saw that line. I saw it clearly. Now, who put that line in my head? That was God. I'd done a lot of work up to that point and a lot of relationship with him. I don't take any credit for that, but I had a relationship with God and God gave me that line and he said, Michael, you're going to be okay. We'll get through this. And I got through it. I'm not saying it wasn't a horrible thing. But I got through it. I have a lot of people in AA to thank for that. There were probably 40 people in my house that day. And things like that make you understand you're not alone anymore. It says, never was I to pray for myself. I'm going to read that again. Never was I to pray for myself. I think I'm going to read that one again. Never was I to pray for myself, except as my request bore and my usefulness to others. You see the whole change? In our thinking of this man, he's thinking about how he can be useful to other people. I think these are the most powerful paragraphs I think maybe I've ever read. It says, then I would only expect to receive. The more we get to others, the more we get. That's the whole deal. Remember, it says, what is our purpose in AA on page 77? Our real purpose in AA is to put ourselves, our lives in order, right? That's what we're trying to do. But it says our real purpose is to maximally fit myself to be of service to God and others. What we're learning in AA is how to fit ourselves to be servants of God and to help other people. It says that would be in great measure. I can't tell you all the blessings I've gotten from AA just doing this meeting. I can't tell you how much it's meant to me. It says, my friend promised. Now look at this. These are the bill promises, we'll call them. Promised when these things were done, I would enter upon a new relationship with my Creator. I can guarantee that. That's if you thoroughly follow the path. You will not fail. You will have a new relationship with the Creator. Now, why was the old relationship no good? Because the old relationship was you were running the show and asking for Him to help you. The new relationship is He's God and you're serving Him. He's your employer. You work for God. God's your Father. You're His Son. And if you do that, if you do these things, not only do you have a new relation with your Creator, but the relationship with the Creator gives you the elements of a way of living which answered all my problems. We don't have any problems that can't be answered anymore. Remember, lack of power? We're going to find a power, and the power solves my problem. The solution to everything is to go to God. And here's the requirement. See if anybody can do this. All you have to believe in the power of God, plus enough willingness, honesty, and humility to establish and maintain the new order of things. So can you be willing, honest, and humble to establish steps 4 through 9, 10 through 12, maintain the new order? You need to keep this new order, this new relationship. And these are essential. So if you don't have this and you don't do it 100% willingness, honest, and humble, it's not going to happen. And it's essential. It's not going to happen without it. It says, now this is really, see if you can understand this. This is very complicated. Simple, but not easy. A price had to be paid. There's no free lunch, right? So is anybody willing to pay a price? Let's say we come in and we say you're going to have a new relationship with God. All your problems are going to be solved. You're going to have a way of living. You're going to have peace and joy. You're going to be serving God and others. And we're going to say there's a price to be paid. And we're going to give you this bill. And they say, do you want to see it? Who knows? Who knows how people would react? Here it is. It meant destruction of my self-centeredness. It has to be destroyed. It has to be destroyed all the time. We don't destroy self-centeredness on Monday and then we're great the rest of our lives. We have to do it all the time. Now, how do you destroy self-centeredness? Isn't that a good question? And I'm going to read the answer. I must turn in all things to the Father of Light who presides over all. Powerful. So the price has to be paid. I have to destroy my self-centeredness. And how do you do it? I must turn in all things to the Father of Light who presides over all. Now, I think I'm going to stop there and because we're running out of time, and I hope you'll forgive me for going long. Now, next week, we're going to pick up with what he's done this and what happens to him and how he sees things. And we'll finish the chapter next week. So, thank you.
Thanks, Mike. Thanks, Doc.